Hey, it's Chris Jones with the Jones Zone, and I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. Hey, real quick, before we get started, I have a favor to ask. If you've listened to the podcast before, or if you enjoy the episode you're about to hear, please like the podcast on social media, and please leave a review. Having listeners like and review the podcast is the fastest way for it to grow and reach more people, and we really want to share our stories with the biggest audience possible. Thank you. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Jones Zone Real Estate Team. That's right. We sponsor our own podcast. So if you know of anyone looking to buy, sell, rent, or invest in residential real estate in the Charlotte, Fort Mill, Rock Hill area, have them connect with us on their favorite platform. Enjoy the show.
It's Chris and Brian Jones, your real estate advocates, community connectors, talking Charlotte and York County area real estate, and interviewing business owners, entrepreneurs, and community leaders. Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast.
All right, ready, Chris?
Yes.
Three, two, one, hit.
Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast. How are you today, Brian?
You know what, to be honest... I would be a lot better if we didn't have to redo this podcast.
Here we go. All right.
Tell them what happened. Tell the people what happened, Chris.
This is take two with Matthew Tringali, who's gracious enough to understand that people make mistakes.
Yeah.
And to come back. When I was editing his podcast, I accidentally deleted it.
How?
Well, I selected a clip.
Yeah.
And... I meant to delete that clip.
Yeah.
Which was 22 seconds.
Was that where you were like, you were just talking off the walls and everything?
That's
like
where you were talking about something. You were talking about genies or some sort of space thing that you had read about. And instead of deleting just that clip, I saved just that clip.
Oh, and then you deleted
it. And the rest of it was gone.
But why would you delete the aliens part, man? That's like what people really want to know.
Not really. No.
Anyways.
All right. Today... back again, Matthew Tringali with Group 15 Real Estate. So Group 15 Real Estate is your single solution to all of your real estate needs. They rental, maintenance, risk management needs in the greater Charlotte area, including North and South Carolina. They specialize in landlord property management services for single family and multifamily rentals. They do marketing, showings, rental applications, screening, and leasing and rent collections. Matthew, welcome back.
I am glad to be back.
To the Jones Zone Podcast, yes. Man. Right. Good to see you again.
All right.
Dude, yeah, so man.
Did you get a haircut?
Probably. You know, that happens kind of regularly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you go every couple of weeks. How often do you get your haircut, by the way, Brian?
Once a month.
Really?
Yeah.
That often?
Yeah. What do you?
I think maybe every two months.
Ah. No, you got to get a new haircut every month at least, man. Because what it does is it boosts your confidence. It makes you feel better about yourself. You know, yeah, you got that going on. You know, there's not much to be confident.
For me, it's more about lazy. I haven't paid for a haircut in over 20 years.
Your wife cuts your hair?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, when I was in college, I was too poor to get a haircut.
Okay.
And it just got like bushier and bushier and bushier until I finally met my wife. And then she was like, okay, well, we got to get some clippers, you know. So went down to the Walmart, got some clippers.
The Walmart?
And buzz it off. And so now what I do, when I get to the point that I actually have to pull out a brush... I decide it's time to cut my hair again.
So she told her girlfriend, she's like, you know, he's got potential, but that hair.
Right, that hair. Yes.
All right, man. So give us a little bit of your personal story, some of your professional background, and then how you got into Group 15 Real Estate.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me back again. And so I've been in Charlotte for 17 years now. We started our company, Group 15 Real Estate, about 9 years ago. And when we started it, we thought we were going to be doing sales and maybe some lease purchase things. But what we found at the time is that the property management business is the piece that really kept growing for us. So the way I tell the story is it felt like after about a year and a half, I felt like I looked in the corner one day and said, we have a property management business here. And so really started paying attention to that business. And so that's really the engine that drives our whole corporation now. And put a lot of effort into that since then over the last 9 years.
Yeah. So what is property management? You say you have a property management business. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah. So we are the all-encompassing solution for landlords. So our ideal client is a landlord that is, you know, wants to spend their time doing other things and really wants to enjoy the passive income nature that comes with rental properties and the wealth creation through rental properties. So we take all of everything involved with rental properties off of their plate. So everything from marketing, finding the tenant, screening the tenant, leasing the property, dealing with maintenance issues, HOA issues, you know, all the things that inevitably come up. If there are late pay issues, if we ever have to file an eviction, you know, everything like that.
How do y'all find the tenants?
Man, it's all about the internet now, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's not hard for tenants to find rental properties. So we have one main platform that we market our property on. And from there, it syndicates out to dozens of other websites. So, you know, Zillow is an important website right now, Trulia, other places like that. And yeah, they find us pretty quickly when the property is priced right and it's the right time of year.
Do you think Zillow will become a brokerage eventually at all? Or, like, what's their deal? Like, it feels like something's going to drop with those guys, right?
Yeah, that's a good question. Will Zillow become a brokerage? At this point, I'm a little worried about Amazon.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear about Amazon last week? You know, getting
into we have.
Yeah.
However, the people listening...
yeah, for those of you who don't know, which doesn't include Brian... What did Amazon say?
Yeah, so Amazon, you know, I kind of just sort of skimmed the headlines. I don't know the whole details here, but they are looking into getting into the mortgage lending space. So, and yeah, I mean, the deal with Amazon is when they enter a space, they always disrupt that space, right? So you look at them buying Whole Foods and, you know, the grocery store's got to be shaking in their boots, you know, seeing what's Amazon going to do with Whole Foods.
Jeff Bezos is a monster.
He's selfish.
Guys, yesterday morning, my wife has this milk frother thing she uses to make her coffee in the morning. Yesterday morning, she woke up and it broke. She got on Amazon, bought a new one, same day delivery. Some person that, like, drove up in their Uber car and delivered this thing to us later that afternoon. So that by this morning, she's making her coffee again like normal. So again, yeah, when we think of, our industry, you know, both real estate sales and property management are ripe for disruption. We'll see what Zillow does. You know, then you got other companies out there like Offerpad and Knock.
Yeah.
You know, Knock just came. They have a super interesting product.
I haven't heard of that. What's that?
So Knock, if you're listening, I'm doing your sales pitch for you, Knock, so send me some business. So what seems to be interesting about Knock is they come in and they have some model basically to solve the problem for the person who wants to sell their house and buy another house, but they can't afford to buy the other house till they sell their house. You guys have probably done transactions like this.
Oh, yeah.
They're complicated. Like, everything's fragile about it. One little piece could go wrong and everybody's upset. You know, try to pull off the double close, or you're going to move in with your in-laws for a few weeks.
The parking van.
Right. You live out of the pod for a couple of days. You know, the whole thing gets complicated. So Knock, I don't remember exactly what they do, but I think what they do is something like, they come in and the client buys the house they want to buy, but Knock actually buys it for them, rents it back to them, and then something like that, or like lets them live in that house rent free maybe until they sell their other house, and then they basically like refi the new house, something like that. I don't remember exactly how the offering works, but they just came to Charlotte, and so you know that's a disruptor, you know, for anybody looking for something like that.
Yeah.
You got Offerpad that came in, so now people go on the internet and be like, I want to sell my house. What can I sell it for? Now, the early indicators I've heard on Offerpad is people are getting really lowball offers.
That's what I heard too.
You know, so is that a threat? Doesn't look like it's much of a threat. That's more of a threat probably to like the local investor guys that are doing the We Buy Houses things. Now they're going to have to compete with Offerpad. But anyway, you know, there's always something going on in every industry, and so, you know, and which is why for, you know, people like us in real estate, you know, we always have to be carefully crafting what our unique offerings are to our clients, right? What are our differentiators that makes us different from Knock and Offerpad? There'll always be a space for us. We just have to be careful that we don't commoditize ourselves.
A unique selling proposition.
Exactly.
Yeah. Don't commoditize yourself.
Don't commoditize yourself. Yep.
So Group 15, you guys do property management, but you're also in sales, right? So how does that work? Like you have a group of salespeople that focus on general brokerage and then a group of people that do property management, or how are you guys structured over there?
Yeah, that's right. So my background was real estate sales. I was doing that for a number of years before we started Group 15 Real Estate. And it's interesting, you know, so we started the company in 2009, which for anybody that's been in real estate that long, you know, that was a rough year for us. The market crashed big time. And so so I got started in that business, and I'll circle back around to your sales question with this story. Basically, I had about 15 listings to sell at that point. And I knew they weren't going to sell. And so I called up all my sellers and said, guys, your house is not going to sell. Nobody can sell a house right now. And I said, I've never done rental property management before, but if you have any interest in renting your property out and you're willing to sort of let me cut my teeth on you, then, you know, let's give it a shot. And they all said yes.
All 15 of them.
Yeah, God bless them. I don't know why they said yes, but they did. So that was how I got started in property management at the time. And I say that, I share that story to say, we treated the property management business in the beginning really like a pipeline for future sales business. So we were just signing up accidental landlords left and right. And by accidental landlords, that means somebody that owned a property, they didn't really want to become a landlord, but they didn't feel like they had any other choice. So they're a reluctant accidental landlord. So we treated our business that way for a long time, knowing that, okay, we're sitting on a lot of future listings here. These people are going to want to sell their house at some point. And in the meantime, while we're waiting for that to happen, we grew to really like the property management business, started working with a lot of investors. But that day has come. We are now in a big-time seller's market. I know you guys are enjoying that. And so we've seen some fruits of that as well over the last couple of years. We've shrunk our property management portfolio almost in half because all of our accidental landlords that previously couldn't or didn't want to sell now can and do want to sell and have. And so that's fed our sales business a lot. So for the clients that we've signed up, we have had the opportunity to sell a lot of those properties. We also work with a lot of investors. So we get investors that will call us saying, I want you to manage a rental property for me, but I don't own a rental property yet. Can you help me find one? And so, you know, we'll offer them a turnkey solution and say, sure, we'll go find it and offer them the whole package. And that works great, especially for long distance landlords from California or something like that. But the great news is we also love to partner with guys like you, with other real estate agents. So when they feed a property into our system, when it's time to sell that property or for that landlord to buy another property, we feed them right back to that landlord and say, hey, yeah, you know, Chris and Brian, they're going to be a great solution for you to sell your property or buy another property.
Yeah. What do you think the main difference is between working with investors and the general public, so to speak? I mean, are investors, do you feel like they're easier because it's less emotional and they're all about the numbers, or do you feel like it's easier to work with the general population?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you hit the nail on the head in terms of removing the emotion from it, right? And so, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, if you're going to buy a house, you're going to live in it, you care about a whole different subset of things. You care about, where's my daughter going to sleep in this house? Is she going to be safe in the backyard? You know, you just care about your enjoyment of the property. Whereas for an investor, it's just all about, do the numbers work, right? So then there's sort of two different subsets of investors, right? There's sort of the passive and active investor. The passive investor is, you know, kind of our ideal client. The active investor is the guy that wakes up in the morning saying, like, no, I really want to get that call about maintenance. I actually want to handle that thing.
So, another light bulb's out? I'll be right over.
That's sort of a different thing. And they care about, you know, things even differently than the passive investor, but yeah.
So if someone's an active investor, at what point should they become a passive investor? I mean, is there like kind of a threshold, or does it just depend on the person? Like, does three properties become too much and now they need a property manager, or how does that usually work?
It really depends on the person. I mean, what I explain to folks is, you know, we all have our unique abilities in life. And all of us are best served by spending our time working on our unique abilities. Because by spending our time working on our unique abilities, that's the thing that's going to make us the most money in life. And by unique abilities, what I mean by that is something that you are, there's a whole, Dan Sullivan is a guy who created this thing called unique abilities, and you can read all, he has a website and all this stuff. But a unique ability is the thing that you are very, very good at doing. You're probably the best person that you know at doing that thing. And you'd wake up and do it even if nobody paid you to do it, right? Those are your unique abilities. So what I say to the investor is look, you're really good at finding rental property, for example, or you're really good at your job at the bank, or whatever the case may be. You focus on that thing. That's going to be the thing that's going to produce you the most money. I'll take this piece off your plate for you and manage that for you, and that's going to free you up to make the most money. Or maybe your unique ability is, I want to go fish or golf or spend time with my kids, whatever, you know. But for some investors, they just say, you know, that maybe they just want the learning experience of, yeah, I know that it's not going to make me more money by managing myself, and I know that I'm not going to enjoy it, but I just want the experience to know what that's like, right?
Have you thought about getting into the Airbnb world, like property management for people who own houses that they use for Airbnb?
Yeah, we have dabbled in that, and I'd say that pejoratively. You should never dabble in anything. But so the first time we dabbled in that was when the DNC came to town, mm-hmm. the Democratic National Convention. Which was, I don't know, was that 2004, I think, or 2008? Yes. I can't remember which year it was.
No, it wasn't 4.
Did they want all the houses for free? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. It was probably, yeah, it was either 08 or 12.
Maybe. Oh, no, it must have been 12.
I think it was 12.
Yeah, I'm going too far back. 2012. And so, yeah, so that was a really interesting opportunity. And so we built out a website for it and picked up about 50 or 60 clients that wanted to rent their place out for the week. And this was really, Airbnb was a pretty new concept yeah. then. I mean, nobody was really doing Airbnb in Charlotte anyway at that point. So anyway, we picked up a lot of clients. Unfortunately, the DNC didn't actually sell out all the hotels quite like they thought. And so we weren't actually able to rent out as many of those properties as we liked. But that was our first dabbling with it. And then, yeah, as Airbnb got more popular over the years, we've had people that have asked us to do that. And we always said, no, we don't do that. And last year we said, okay, sure, we'll try. And so we tried it with a couple of properties. And really what we figured out for us is that, you know, it's not our core competency. We really need to focus on our core competency. But since then, a guy that we work with a lot, his name is Andrew Clank, and he started a company called Air Hospitality. And great guy, highly recommend him and his company. They just got started here in the last year, and that's exactly what they do, and only what they do is Airbnb rental management. And they love to work with realtors and property management companies, get referrals from them. So we've been selling business back and forth with them. Matter of fact, we're working on a couple of deals with him right now.
Interesting.
Yep.
One of the things that interests me with your company is the opportunity to build like lifetime relationships with clients. And by clients, I mean tenants who become buyers, who become sellers or landlords. How does that process work, and how are you able to kind of take people from, I want to rent a house, to I want to buy a house, to now I want to sell a house and buy another house? Like, have you guys made relationships like that? And then how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, we want to get better at that. I mean, so what we have found is there tends to be an inherent adversarial tone to the tenant-landlord relationship. And so that's a hurdle that we have to overcome with our tenants, is they just sort of go into it just not thinking of us that way. You know, they just think of us in a different way. And so so that's an educational hurdle for the tenant that we want to do a better job. As a matter of fact, that's one of our goals for 2018, is just do a better job touching our tenants and really making sure that they understand how much we appreciate them. So obviously our goal, number one, is always to get them to renew the lease. That's what's best for our clients, the landlords. But having said that, as you guys have pointed out, that's a natural life cycle for a person, is to rent for a while, then buy. So if that's a decision they're going to make anyway, to buy a property, then yeah, we want to make sure that they know that's something we can service for them. And so we're building out some platforms to kind of help make sure that's in front of them, you know, if they ever want to make that decision.
And how do you dance around or balance kind of fiduciary duty or whatever you want to call it between your landlord client and your tenant client? Like, how do you keep all that in mind so nobody's getting upset about you showing favoritism or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, so a couple of thoughts here. Number one, just reiterate the what I just said, which is we want tenants to renew their lease, right? So, I mean, our whole system is built out around making them very happy, wanting to stay, not wanting to move. And that honors our fiduciary responsibility to our landlord. The other thing that we try to help our landlords understand is your tenant is your greatest asset, right? We tend to think of the property as the greatest asset, But the property is only an asset in so much as there's a paying tenant in there that's also partnering with you to take good care of this place. So what we say is happy tenants make happy landlords, right? So what do I mean by that? So if a tenant puts in a maintenance request, and you know, our number one job at that point is to fix this thing as quickly as we can. We want to keep the price reasonable, but our main goal is to fix it as quickly as we can, because the tenant will remember that, and that'll be a positive experience for them. You have to remember, people rent properties because they don't want to deal with maintenance, right? So if we can provide that level of service to them, they'll remember that when it's time to renew the lease. So some landlords might be like, well, you know, can we shop that around? I think maybe we can find somebody that can do this thing for, you know, $25 cheaper. Okay, well, maybe you can, but is that going to take 3 days longer and they're going to do as good of a job? And then you have an upset tenant who's going to remember that when it's time to renew the lease, and maybe they want to leave, and that might cost you $5,000 to paint and replace the carpets and have it sit vacant for a few weeks and whatever. So that's just an education thing to get our landlords to understand how important that is. That, yeah, by us taking great care of the tenant, that is actually a fiduciary responsibility to the landlord.
How many different types of partners? I'm like Peter Brady on them. But how many different types of partners? I mean, you mentioned having something go wrong in the house. I mean, do you guys have a contracting partner and a landscaping partner? And like, how many different people have their fingers in what you guys do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we, as you might expect, we work with a whole host of different vendors, from, you know, kind of everyday handyman to appliance repair companies, appliance supply companies, landscapers, cleaners, steam, carpet cleaners, painters, tree trimmers, you know, I mean, roofers, you know, you name it. We're, you know, if it relates to a house, you know, we have our hand in that pot helping out.
So you're doing all this cool thing with, you're incorporating several sides of the transaction and the process and home owning and renting, but have you guys ever thought about getting into the lending business at all? I know we talked about Amazon earlier, but have you guys ever thought about that?
No, not really. Matter of fact, my business partner, Danny Pluteman, he was a mortgage broker. And so similar to, you know, he was doing that and I had 15 listings for sale. You know, he saw the writing on the wall and was like, hey, the independent mortgage broker, as we knew it back in 2008, 2009, was going away. So, you know, that, can I say this? I mean, I want to say that is a pretty commoditized business.
Yeah.
Mortgage lending. With all due respect to the loan officers I love to refer business to, I love them and I love to refer business to them because I think they provide great service. But in terms of the products that they're offering, for the most part, that's a very commoditized business.
Yeah, it seems like for the most part, they probably just plug in a bunch of numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're all essentially relying on the same set of investors to fund their loans. So unless you're truly going, you know, portfolio lending or private money lending, because you have an uber unique situation, you know, for 95% of people, you know, it's the same products that are out there for them.
You've mentioned keeping good relationships with realtors who refer people to you guys. How does that work? I know you guys take pride in building relationships with other realtors that bring you business. So what do you guys do to make sure that you're doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So so the first thing we do is when they come in into our software, our database, we have a custom field right next to the client's name and property that we put the realtor's name right there, Chris Jones. And so we know every time we pull that property up that, hey, this is a client of Chris's. And most importantly, when it comes to for lease renewal time, which for us, we start working on that about 3 to 4 months ahead of the lease ending. We start touching the tenant and reaching out to them and working that process. And at the same time is when we would reach out to our realtor referral partner and say, hey, you know, we're going to start working on a renewal. Now might be a good time for you to run sales comps for this landlord, just so they kind of know what their house is worth right now. If they are thinking about selling it, you know, now's the time we would need to give notice to the tenant. So, you know, now would be a good time to reach out to them. Or especially if we have a tenant that's given notice to vacate. Again, we're going to reach out to that realtor referral partner and let them know that. We also, every year, ask all of our landlords, do you want to buy another investment property this year and build wealth that way? And if they say yes, we're going to send that back to that realtor referral. We also try to do a good job educating our referral partners in how for them how to build their business with investors. A lot of realtors out there, you know, they're used to working retail deals and maybe they haven't worked with a lot of investors. So we'll educate them on things like cap rate, net operating income, internal rate of return, you know, all these kind of things that an investor is going to care about. How to quickly be able to scan through, is this a deal worth looking at or not? And kind of the 1% rule, all these different things to help educate the realtor partners on how to work with investors. And then hopefully they can use that to build more business for themselves and work with more investors and build a little niche there as well.
What is the 1% rule?
Yeah, what is all that stuff you just talked about?
Yeah, so so when you're looking at deals and whether or not they're going to be a good rental property in particular, you want as many sort of quick little rules as you can to figure out if this is a deal worth taking to the next step. So the 1% rule is the quick and easiest rule to follow, which is basically is the rental rate on the property around 1% of the purchase price of the property? And if it is, then it's probably a deal worth at least looking at the next step to see if this is a deal worth pursuing.
So that would be if the price is $100,000. If I can buy it for $100,000, can I rent it for $1,000?
Exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. And so, and from there, it depends on the appetite of the investor. So, I mean, I have some investors that would say, I'm actually happy if it's less than that. You know, maybe if it only rent for $800 on a $100,000 purchase, they might be happy with that. And the reason why they might be happy with that is because they might be focused on buying in a certain part of town where they're banking on the house just holding its value and appreciating really well. They're not as concerned about monthly cash flow. Versus other investors might say, no, that 1% is actually not good enough. I want to see $1,200 a month on a $100,000 property. And these are investors that are all about the cash flow. They're saying, I just want that monthly tick on the cash flow. I'm not as concerned about whether or not this property is going to appreciate in the future. You know, I don't want to worry about that. I just want to know the monthly cash flow is going to work. So that's the first little quick and rule. You can see how, as a realtor, you can answer that question within about 30 to 60 seconds. You can pretty quickly figure out what do we think this place might rent for, at least a decent range on the property, and just figure out, okay, is this worth taking the next step on? Because as you're looking at deals, you'll probably, you know, less than 10% of things you look at will pass that test and be able to take the next step. So the other big thing we look at is cap rate. This is for capitalization rate. It'll be a little hard to describe on a podcast, but any of your listeners could go just Google cap rate and kind of see what this looks like. But on a rental property, what this means is the first thing we need to figure out is what is our expected net operating income on the property? And the way we look at this is we take the monthly rental rate and we multiply it by 12 to get our annual, our max gross annual revenue on the property. So again, on that $1,000 a month purchase, that would have been $12,000 a year. Okay, and then from there, we know that the expenses on a rental property are generally going to be about 40% of that gross potential rent. And that 40% is made up of five categories. It's taxes, insurance, maintenance, vacancy, and management. And even if somebody's not going to hire management, I still encourage them to keep that number in there because their time is worth something. And someday they might want management, so they need to make sure it fits in the budget. So anyway, so you take 40% off for the expenses, so that leaves you at 60% net for your net operating income. So take that 60% number, the NOI, and divide it by the total acquisition cost. And the total acquisition cost generally should include the purchase price, closing costs, and any improvement costs that the property need. Did it need a new roof when you bought it? You know, something like that. So divide that NOI number by the total acquisition cost, and that gives you your cap rate. Right now in the greater Charlotte area, 6% is about kind of the average cap rate we're seeing.
6% of what?
6%. So 6% would be the NOI divided by that acquisition cost. If that number gets you to 6%, then that's a pretty good deal. And so again, you go back to some investors will look at it differently. Some of my investors might look at it and say, yeah, if you could get me 4.5%, 5%, that's fine. I'm okay with that. Because you know, I really just care about the long-term appreciation. I'm buying it in a decent part of town, you know, something like that. I don't need the monthly cash flow. It's okay. And then other investors would look at that and say, 6% is not good enough for me. I only want to buy things that are 8%+. Because again, these are the investors that they really want that monthly cash flow looking as good as possible, not as concerned about the long-term value of the property. Now, you'll notice on the net operating income, the big thing I didn't include is a mortgage payment.
Yeah. I'm trying to run the numbers in my head, and it doesn't seem like it would be worth it.
Yeah, so the cap rate, the interesting thing about the cap rate is it's a number to evaluate irrespective of whatever the financing you might happen to be doing. So, so if you are buying a property cash, then that cap rate is particularly meaningful to you because that's also your cash-on-cash return. So that leads me to cash-on-cash return, which is the third way to evaluate a property. So with cash-on-cash return, now we are going to factor in our mortgage payment. So with cash-on-cash return, we take that same net operating income number we were looking at before, but now we also subtract out our principal and interest payment on the mortgage. So that this now gives us our net cash that we expect to receive on this property over the course of a year. Now, this time, instead of dividing it by the acquisition cost, all we need to divide it by is the cash outlay. So did you put 20% down? Did you pay for your own closing costs? Things like that. So so now, you're going to divide your true net, including your mortgage payment, divided by your cash. So that'll give you a cash-on-cash return. So again, you know, we're typically seeing this number around 4 to 6%. So that gives you kind of three layers of analysis: the 1% rule, cap rate, cash on cash return. The fourth one, which is a lot more complicated and you would kind of need to use a special spreadsheet to get to it, is the IRR, the internal rate of return. And the IRR will factor in things like expected future appreciation, depreciation of the property, tax benefit of the property. I mean, we have some people that, you know, they want to buy investment property just because it's good for their taxes, right? And so they're just evaluating it in a totally different way. So for most investors, we never need to get to digging in deep enough with the IRR. They really care more about just the cash flow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cash rules everything around me.
Ooh, that's a mouthful. Do you guys do any flips or anything? What are you finding more investors are interested in flipping or renting?
Yeah, I mean, what I find I go to a lot of actor investor groups, and that's where I sort of cut my own teeth in real estate, you know, when I was getting started 15 years ago. And for most investors in that community, what they do is they buy a place with the plan to flip it, but always have a good plan B in place, so they don't mind holding it and renting it. And the reason why they like to keep flipping things is to keep the cash going. Because when you're building up a rental portfolio, you pretty quickly can tie up all of your cash. And then it can become a slower burn to be able to add more units to your portfolio. So most of them are doing some mix of that. You know, they like to flip, and then they like to sort of accidentally or purposely keep a few rental properties over time, that kind of thing. Unless they are just, you know, collected into millions of dollars of cash with some silent partner or something, which some of them are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. So if anyone wants to get into investing, what's the best way to do that? Just kind of reach out to an agent and see what's out there, or call you guys?
Man, you know, the interesting thing about investing is there's just so many different strategies. Honestly, my best advice to anybody thinking about investing is to go to BiggerPockets.com. And there's also a podcast,
yeah.
The Bigger Pockets podcast. So, you know, on there you'll find anything and everything you want to know about investing, everything from house hacking, to whatever, to doing big, huge flips. And so, you know, there's door knocking. I mean, there's just so many different ways to come at this. So depending if your goal is to, but if by that question you mean like, yeah, somebody who wants to quit their day job and they just want to be out there doing the hustle, then yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways to go after that. Go to your local RIA meetings, go to Bigger Pockets. But if by that you mean somebody that likes their day job and, you know, they really want to do some wealth creation on the side, absolutely. Call a real estate agent that they trust. And see if that real estate agent can start helping them find some investment properties.
Awesome. Well, Matthew, let's take it home, man. Take the last minute. Just kind of remind people who you are, what and where you work, and then most importantly, how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, Matthew Trigali with Group 15 Real Estate. We're based here in the greater Charlotte area. We also have an office in Raleigh, and we primarily do property management and love doing it. We love working with our realtor referral partners to send business back and forth that way. And anybody can go to our website, group15realestate.com, find me on there and click and reach out. I'm also really active on Facebook if they want to find me on there as well.
Lots of funny videos. Now, do you have I know your personal page, but do you guys have a professional page, I guess, Group 15?
Yeah, we have a business page. And actually, there's a, if you go to our business page right now, I put this funny video on there last week. I can wrap up with this story. Of this person that went in to look at this rental property that apparently that they owned and apparently hadn't been in there in years. I think like 17 years or something. And they go in there, and the guy, they had to evict somebody. They go in. I'm not joking, you guys. There were... Do I want to say millions? That might be exaggerating. There were an enormous amount of Bud Light cans everywhere. Go to our Facebook group page and find the video.
Wow.
It is hilarious. I mean, just like the whole house filled with Bud Light cans. Just it's hilarious.
All right, Matthew. Well, thanks for coming on again. It was good to have you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Jones Zone Podcast with Chris and Brian Jones. We'll catch you on the next episode.